I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's Unrivaled. Another game added to the schedule of the BYU Cougars. Special coverage on KSL's Unrivaled.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Geary, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us on the program. It's the night of the voices across the land, the voice of Coastal Carolina football. Joe Cashin just joined us. Segment prior, and now the voice of the Cougars, Greg Rebel. You're going to hear him with the call right here on KSL News Radio for that game. It's going to be a 3:30 kick, which means a 1:30 pregame right here on KSL News Radio. And Greg Rebel, our guest right now on the program. Greg, when you went to bed last night, it was we were kind of thinking it was going to be something going on, and it was still 1 o'clock, and I'm scrolling Twitter. I'm just trying to put all the pieces together. Is that kind of how you were until it was all finally confirmed this morning?
I had a couple of pretty good inklings that this thing would transpire, but until it's really a done deal, you can't say for sure. But it certainly came together as quick as any college football scheduling agreement ever. It was really a matter of not even days, hours. It was really a matter of hours from when it became possible to when it was a done deal. This season has just been just something else, crazy in every possible way. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, in the future when teams are scheduling games 10 and 15 and 20 years down the line, we're going to say, come on. You don't need
– You guys are rookies.
You can do it in a day. You know, what are you doing? You know, so, I mean, yeah, it's just nuts. But it's a good game. It's a game BYU really needs, right? I mean, there really was not a lot of room left to move the needle, you know, with only one game left on the schedule.
Right.
And while San Diego State, I think, is going to give BYU a heck of a game, and they've shown themselves to be really capable and beat BYU last year, it's almost like BYU just needed something to pop up like this. And it
so
did.
Does it move the needle then? I mean, BYU, they win this game. Does this game against Coastal Carolina move the needle?
It does, because it's a top 15 team in the polls and a top 20 team in the college football playoff rankings. And so it's the best BYU can do right now. Outside of a P5, which you just can't get those games right now, this is it. And so, you know, if the committee's looking for, you know, something to judge BYU on in a way that they say they really can't to this point, this is the game. It's a 9-0 team that's in the committee's rankings already. So the committee already knows about Coastal, and so this is a chance for BYU to, you know, show that, you know, what they've been doing against other teams, ideally they can do against a ranked team. So it's a golden opportunity for BYU. It might be the difference between BYU, you know, being in the New Year's Six conversation and not.
Greg, you're one of the more prepared, or maybe the most prepared person I've ever worked with when it comes to getting ready for games. And so, speaking of having those hours of turnaround, we know BYU was pouring over their iPads with Coastal Carolina highlights last night and film and at work, you know, doing the practice thing. How do you get ready on short notice? Because the reality is we all don't know a lot about Coastal Carolina. The good thing is you can go back and there are metrics we can weigh these guys against. What pops out at you?
Well, backing up a second, of course, I came back east on a basketball road trip.
Right.
But but suspecting that there was something possible, I brought all of my football stuff with me. So, you know, my football boards, my football stats.
Of course.
You just travel with that all the time, right, Greg?
A little bit of different equipment. And so I came prepared for two sports and three games with only one sport and two games on the schedule. And it turned out that I needed what I brought. So that's helpful. Coastal Carolina is interesting in that they and BYU are both top 10 teams in pass efficiency. But BYU is passing for about 100 yards a game more than Coastal. BYU leans more on the pass than Coastal does, but when the Shawnee players do it, they're very efficient when they do it. Grayson McCall has a 20-1 touchdown to INT ratio right now. And you don't need Scott Mitchell to tell you that's a pretty impressive ratio. It's exactly 20 touchdowns and exactly one interception for Grayson McCall. So both he and Zach Wilson are among the most efficient quarterbacks in the country. It's just that Zach throws it a little more and for a little more pop. But McCall is a heck of a QB, and they run, I'll call it a power pistol sometimes. It's pistol with a B-back, if you will. So two running backs in the set, but out of the pistol, I like to call a power pistol with, you know, strength to one side or the other. That's a common formation for them, but they're really multiple. BYU studying, a ton of different personnel packages because that's how they play it. A lot of teams BYU's played this year are kind of basic in how they line up, and Coastal's not one of those teams. It's an impressive running team. They run more than BYU does. Cougars pass more than the Shawnee Clears do. But both have, you know, primary backs they go to that average a good number of yards per carry. Tyler Allgeier is one of the most prolific running backs in the country right now, averaging 7.2 yards per carry. And both C.J. Marable and Reese White are better than 5-plus per pop. You know, C.J.'s right at 5, and Reese is at 6.4. And McCall can run it. Wilson has more touchdowns, but Grayson McCall has a ton more yards, and so he's super mobile as well. So four guys with 300 yards or better on the ground, so they do spread it around pretty well. BYU's a little more centric with Tyler Allgeier. Lopini Katoa didn't play last game, and his health has been a question mark. So, you know, they were kind of aiming for Lopini to be ready for San Diego State. Well, now a game pops up ahead of that. You know, will it be, you know, mostly Tyler Allgeier on Saturday? That would be my suspicion at this point. But, Kavika Fonua has been utilized. Miles Davis has been utilized. So the Cougars have found just enough guys to complement Tyler, but he is the go-to guy right now and among the better backs BYU's put on the field in recent seasons.
Do you think that with all the flexibility BYU's had to have, I mean with the players, the coaches, the administration, do you think it actually helps them in games where – you know, some teams would be, you know, they'd freak out. We don't have enough time to practice. We're going to go all the way to Conway, South Carolina. I've been there, by the way, Greg, and it's not a lot to write home about. But I'm just curious, do you think that having to be flexible actually maybe helps them play better in games where, you know, situations come up in games you don't expect, and they seem to handle it well?
Well, here's what I kind of think about when I hear the word, you know, flexibility or preparation or challenge that they've had this year with everything else that every team has had to deal with. What they haven't had to face, Scott, is a lot of in-game adversity. They didn't play great against UTSA. They won at 27-20, but they weren't going to lose that game, right? That never felt like a game they were going to lose. Everything else is a blowout, except for the Houston game. Mm-hmm. And that's still the one I kind of go back to say when BYU had to play 60 minutes, a full four quarters with the ones in the game, they responded and won the game handily at the end. And we really haven't had to see that team yet this year, more than maybe on one, maybe one and a half occasions, the team that has to go pedal down for 60. And not only do I think that Coastal can challenge BYU to have to play that kind of game, but I think BYU has to go out and simply show, you know, since Boise State got almost no respect, right? The win over Boise meant almost nothing to the committee, evidently.
Wow.
Remember, you know, I think the last time I talked to you guys, we talked about, I think it was before Boise, right? And we talked about what does this game mean? How important is it? I thought it might have been one of the five most important games BYU'd ever played. Well, in hindsight, that wasn't the case because the committee gave it no credence.
Right.
Even though BYU went up there and won going away, nobody wins like that on the blue turf. The committee said, yeah, but Boise was kind of shorthanded, so it didn't count. And so the Boise win really almost carried no weight with the committee. That's unfortunate. That's why the Coastal Carolina game becomes huge, because we already know what the committee thinks about Coastal. And so at least there should be some respect built in if BYU plays well and wins, whether it's winning handily or not. But back to the original point, I think it's a game where BYU has to go pedal to the metal for four quarters, 60 minutes, keep the ones in, and show the committee what this team is really all about. And I think everything, Scott, you talked about has prepared this team to play that kind of game. I still go back to this, guys. If BYU ends up playing 10, 11, 12 games this year, how many teams will be able to say that? Forget the fact that BYU might win them all. Yeah, let's look past the fact that BYU might actually win all of those games. But just playing that many games means something. It should mean something. The committee doesn't care. The committee's just, they're treating four-win teams like nine-win teams right now. And you got to know that in this season of all seasons, getting to 9, 10, 11, that takes a lot.
Yeah.
It takes a lot from top to bottom of a program to get to that position, and that deserves some credit.
Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars, joining us here on the program. And, Greg, when was the last time you saw the average price at a BYU game for a ticket at $870 to get in?
I heard about that. Supply and demand, my friend. Supply and demand.
Oh, my goodness.
If you keep the crowd small, the ticket prices will go large.
My son is like, can we go? I said, we'll go to the Super Bowl before we go to this game. We'll have to pick a New Year's Six game if we're going to go. All right, Greg. Well, we look forward to the call this weekend, and good luck, and have fun out there in Conway, South Carolina. Maybe get over to Myrtle Beach. Why not? We appreciate
that's
you
where I'm flying
us.
Into. Flying into and staying in Myrtle Beach, and so that's the plan.
All right, Greg. Thanks for hanging out and staying up a little bit later with us on the East Coast. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.